From the Berkshires to the Sound, from wherever you live in MLB America, this is Inside the Parker. You give us 22 minutes and we'll give you the scoop on Major League Baseball. Now here's Baseball Hall of Fame voter number 83, Rob Parker.
Welcome into Inside the Parker. I'm your host, Rob Parker. What a show we have for you today. We'll talk with former major leaguer and current NBC Bay Area A's analyst, Bip Roberts. Plus, we'll talk about a new book. Andrew Marinus is the author. He talks about the life of Glenn Burke. That and much more. Let's go.
To lead off, it's getting robbed.
And keep him up.
Rob's hot take on the three biggest stories in Major League Baseball. Number one.
Wednesday night, George Springer finally was activated from the injured list and made his long-awaited Blue Jays debut, yes, against the Nationals in Dunedin, Florida. And my goodness, it took forever. Everybody's waiting to see George Springer, who of course signed that big $150 million contract, to leave Houston and go and play for the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays are playing much better. Vlad Guerrero Jr. is playing well, and to add him at the top of the lineup will be a big boost to the Blue Jays. So it'll be interesting to see how he fits in. He was injured in spring training, and obviously it took a while. He was slated Wednesday night to start as the Blue Jays DH and be in the leadoff spot. So it's good to see George Springer healthy and back out there playing baseball.
Number two.
It was 9 years to the day on Wednesday that Bryce Harper made his major league debut with the Washington Nationals. That's right. And 9 years later, say it isn't so. He might be as good as he's ever been. Over his first 93 plate appearances this year for the Phillies, the outfield is hitting .329. He has six home runs, a 200 OPS plus, which is 3 points better than his career mark from his 2015 National League MVP award-winning season. So he's playing very, very well for the Phillies. And, you know, when he signed that big contract, people were ripping on him, and the Phillies didn't make the playoffs. And remember, the Nationals won the World Series, so everybody was just saying, hey, good riddance. The Nationals are better off without Bryce Harper. But Bryce Harper is a big star, and people need to get off of it. He moves the needle. Remember when he signed with the Phillies, he sold more jerseys and more tickets than any baseball player we can remember. In fact, he sold more jerseys than LeBron did when he came to L.A. More people bought Phillies Bryce Harper jerseys than bought Lakers LeBron James jerseys. That's a star in baseball. He's a guy who can move the needle. I love watching Bryce Harper play. I'm glad he's healthy. He's playing great. And the Phillies will be in the mix. It's a tough division in the National League East. But Bryce Harper continues to play as he's capable. The Phillies will be in the hunt.
Number three.
It is hard not to go gaga over Fernando Tatis Jr. I get it. He's a young player. He's 22 years old. People are already saying, is he the best young player in baseball since Ken Griffey Jr. or A-Rod or players of that ilk? And it's hard to look at Tatis Jr. and not think so. And I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment, but what he did to the Dodgers in that four-game series in L.A. over the weekend was as impressive as anything. He had five home runs. No shortstop had ever done that, hit that many home runs. And then this is the greatest part. On the anniversary of when his dad hit two grand slams against the Dodgers in the same inning. Yes, it wasn't a mistake. In the same inning, Fernando Tatis, his dad, Fernando Tatis Jr. hit two home runs against the Dodgers. And he's just fun. One of the broadcasters doing the game Sunday night said, this guy has so much swag, and it's not even an act. He can't help it. He's just the way he carries himself, the way he's stealing bases, the way he plays in the field. He's not perfect, but man, is he worth the price of admission? I haven't seen a player in a long time to grab that much attention from people. And the Dodgers and Padres is a real rivalry. Don't kid yourself. And a lot of it has to do with Fernando Tatis Jr.
Here comes the big interview. Listen and learn.
Oh, it's so good.
All right, now let's welcome to the podcast former Major League outfielder.
Right, man. I'm just down here at the church ministry trying to help people get groceries. And we're just trying to do our thing, man, making sure everybody's okay.
Man, great work as always. Appreciate that. I want to talk about the Oakland A's. And we know they had the big 13-game win streak. Before we get there, Bip, what happened, Lucy, for the first six, where they were outscored 50-13, started out 0-6, and things were looking really bleak when the season started. What happened?
You know how streaky baseball is and how early in the season guys have not found that rhythm, according to going from spring training day games the season night game, and you have to find that happy medium. And I think what happened was the A's just came out flat. They had played well in spring training, but then you have to transfer that to the season. And the season is much different than the regular, than preseason. So I think they had to find their niche. And they got off to a slow start. But remember, they played Houston, they played the Dodgers, and then they played Houston again. Two teams, well, the Dodgers were defending champs, and Houston a team that they're going to have to compete with. So they, right out the box, they were thrown into the fire, and they didn't come out and play well. They didn't play well in any facet of the game. Pitching, the starting pitching was getting beat up. Guys were striking out with runners in scoring position, and the defense was making errors. And then, as you know, as streaky as baseball is, they turned it around all of a sudden. They started playing against some teams that weren't as good as Houston. But the funny part is they beat Houston in Houston in that next series. And then, you know, they were playing Detroit. They played a couple teams that we thought they were superior than. And they showed once they got their confidence and once they got their rhythm and the pitching started coming around, all facets of the game took off and they won 13 straight.
Amazing streak, 13 straight. The longest in the American League since the Indians won 22 in a row back in 2017. And the A's back in 2002 won 20 in a row. So it fell short of that, obviously, but still a great run. This is a team that won the AL West last year. People know that the A's were good. I was surprised that they got off to the start, but I didn't think they were going to be a bad team. What did Bob Melvin do not to panic? You know, when you start off as bad as they were, is he a calming force for that team?
He is a calming force, but he has a fire inside of him. You know, he's that quiet fire that he just simmers. And if there's a time he needs to go off on the team or let the team know they're not playing well, he will do that. And during that 0-7 start, they did have a manager's meeting where he let the guys know they weren't playing well and up to their capabilities. And after he left the room, they had a players-only meeting. And after that, they were able to start turning around. And I think, you know, when you have guys in there who have our leaders, and the Mark Cannas and guys like that, they understand, you know, Chapman, Olsen. They know and understand what it's like to be on a winning team. And so they just stepped forward and said, hey, guys, we're better than this. We got to show better in all facets of the game. And collectively, they galvanized as a team.
Our guest here on Inside the Parker is former major leaguer and current NBC Bay Area pregame show host for the Oakland A's, Bip Roberts. Bip, what about Jed Lowrie? I mean, he's a guy who turned it around and got things going. How big of an impact has he had for the A's?
He is unbelievable. You talk about a veteran guy who understands his role and what his job is. He's a professional hitter. He plays a solid second base. And I think what happened is when Jed came here and he started, when he left New York, you know, he left there unhealthy. But when he got here, for some reason, I think that California air, it just got into his lungs. And he just all of a sudden became Jed Lowrie again. And it's like he never left the team. And what he does at the plate on both sides is he gives you a professional at bat. He squares the ball up, hits the ball extremely hard. And at times he'll drive the ball in the gap, sometimes he'll hit it out the yard. But I just look at his leadership and his When he's healthy, he goes to the post every day, and he brings something to the table. And I think he shows by example more than by verbal. And I think the guys have shown or seen now that he's a guy that you can follow, especially when he's healthy. He's going to lead you in the right direction. Jed's a very calming influence in the locker room because he's been around and he understands the game. And so when guys have questions, they can go to him and he can help answer those. But by answering them, he can still go out there and show them what the answer totally is.
Who are the pitching stars for the A's for people who are listening who don't follow the Oakland A's to say, you know, who's getting it done on the mound for them?
Well, Mania's doing pretty well. He's still learning. He's still trying to understand how to use that fastball, use that cutter, and that slider to both sides of the plate. Montas had a tough game yesterday, but he gives you a chance to win every game. He throws extremely hard. He's got a good cutter. He can move the ball up in the zone. He can hit the corners. He can expand the zone. When you look at it and you look at Lozardo, he's still young. He still tries to throw the ball by people, and sometimes his fastball straightens out. You've got to learn how to change speed, use both sides of the plate, and read the hitters a little better. But he's got outstanding stuff. He can throw the ball 98, 99 miles an hour, and once he learns that pinpoint accuracy, he's going to be tough. And I just believe that Chris Bassett, I've always said this guy has stuff that is no-hitter type stuff. And I think that he is the leader of this staff. He's the number one guy right now. He's the guy that's come up with the wave. The A's are riding the wave. He's the guy that's come up with, let's ride the wave, guys. But he also is a very outstanding pitcher. And when you watch him pitch, you know, you'll get a chance to see an above-average fastball, above-average command with his secondary and his third pitch. But the bottom of it is that he will attack the zone. And when he attacks the zone, he's almost unhittable.
Last thing, Bip. I mean, the AL West has gotten better. Mariners are good. Astros, of course, are there. Angels have gotten better. Rangers are hovering around near closer to 500. Do the A's win this division?
I think they win this division again. You know, even without Marcus Semien, who was their leader last year, I think Elvis Andrus has stepped in and played really well at shortstop. And, you know, that's a key position when it comes to having a solid defense. Matt Chapman's going to be good. Olsen has been tremendous at first, still picking things. And Jed Lowry at second has been outstanding. Murphy behind the plate is outstanding as well. Calls a great game, can throw you out. And so he can minimize the running game. I just believe that these guys know how to compete for nine innings. They look forward to the walk-off win. They enjoy that, and I think that Bob Melvin is the perfect leader for this team. Through the good and through the bad, he's going to guide them in the right direction, and I think at the end they're going to win this West.
All right, there he is, Bip Roberts, former major leaguer and current NBC Bay Area pregame show host for the Oakland A's. Hey, Bip, thanks for the knowledge, man. We appreciate you. Stay well, buddy.
All right, Rob, thanks for having me, my brother. You take care of yourself, too.
It's time for the Pocket Protector Central. The analytic numbers you need to know. Well, maybe.
Anthony Masterson is his name. BS Analytics is his game. What do you got for me, Anthony?
It's so cliche for a stat guy to talk about Mike Trout, isn't it? We know he's awesome, could probably be the best ever, but it's boring, right? I mean, how much better could he possibly get? Well, if early returns are anything, the 2021 version of Mike Trout could somehow be the best ever. Yes, it is true. Just take a look at his numbers so far. 431 average, 538 on base percentage, good for a 1353 OPS, all the best marks in the league. In fact, this could be the best month Trout has ever had in his illustrious career. The average, OBP, and OPS are his best in any month ever, and his weighted on base average, or WOBA, a metric that works like on base percentage, but adds value based on how the player reached base, not just if they reached base, of 556 is also tops in his career for any month. The league average, by the way, is around 320. So Trout is about 70% better than league average. And just looking at his slash line, you start whittling down players who have ever accomplished this feat. The list of AL players to slash 400, 500, 800 in April is short. In fact, the last to do it was the Yankees' Paul O'Neill in 1994. But the eight-player list also includes luminaries like George Brett, Frank Robinson, Al Kaline, and yeah, some guy named Babe Ruth. Trout is impossibly still getting better.
And what that ball is!
It was a big week in the big leagues.
Who's up?
I don't believe it! My own
or is it fair? And now, from MLBBro.com, here's J.R. Gamble.
J.R., at this junction of the season, is it foul or fair to say that Vlad Guerrero Jr. and Fernando Tatis Jr. are the two best players in the game?
Fair.
It's a fair ball.
Fernando Tatis and Vlad Guerrero Jr. are two of the future superstar faces of baseball. They may not statistically be the best two players in the game yet, but they are the most talented and impactful. The time is now. They aren't prospects anymore. Vlad and Tatis are both tied for second in homers. Vlad Jr. is fifth in batting average. The performances delivered by these young Latin lords the past week should leave no doubt as to why they are considered future Hall of Famers, despite having played less than 400 games between them. When you got it, you got it. And if they were talking raw power numbers, baby Vlad is booming. Guerrero launched 3 home runs against the Nationals on Tuesday night. If it's at all fathomable, little Vlad might be better than his Hall of Fame father, who finished his career with 2,590 hits, 449 home runs, and a .318 lifetime batting average. I mean, Pop never hit less than 315 full seasons. Tatis, he's already better than his dad, and the explosiveness in his swing was evident in a series against the arch-rival Dodgers, where he hit 2 homers on the anniversary of when his dad hit 2 grand slams in 1 inning against the Dodgers back in the day. Tatis Jr. hit 5 jacks for the Dodgers series. MLB has some great players, but only the legends do stuff like Vlad and Tatis Jr. are doing. It's like you know when you are watching something special. Jordan and LeBron in their early years. Michael Vick with Atlanta. And Naomi Osaka right now in tennis. There's an electricity involved with their performance. These two guys remain the creme de la creme. And the scary part is, they are just 22 years old. Nobody's messing with these guys over the next decade.
Turn money into more money.
Now it's time for Betting on the Bases with Dave Gascon.
Love that money. Love that money.
Thank you very much. A brand new week of baseball. How about last weekend, though, right? Dodgers and Padres. San Diego took 3 of 4 from Los Angeles, coming from behind in the final game when they were down 7-1. No money on that, but we did a fine job, at least bringing home some cash. And now we look forward to another week of baseball. I'm taking a little bit of chalk. I'm taking a dog, and then I'm also doing some overs as well. First off, with the over, going to be a lot of firepower, especially down in Texas between the Rangers and the Red Sox. Red Sox surprisingly have done well to open up this season, swinging the bats and getting some decent pitching. Because of that, I like them and the Rangers to hit the total over in that affair. Now, the chalk I'm going to take, unfortunately, is with the New York Yankees, and I understand there's going to be a lot of chalk on this ball game, but I'm taking Gerrit Cole and the New York Yankees versus the Detroit Tigers in this matchup. Tigers, one of the worst pitching staffs in all of Major League Baseball. Take them. And then also I'm taking at home the Chicago White Sox against Shane Bieber and the Cleveland Indians. Take the dog and the White Sox at home, book it, and make some coin.
When Rob was a newspaper columnist, he lived by this motto: if I'm writing, I'm ripping. Let's bring in a writer or broadcaster, old or new.
All right, now let's welcome to the podcast a New York Times bestselling author, Andrew Marinus, and he has a new book out called The True Story of Glenn Burke, Singled Out, the First Openly Gay Major League Player and the Inventor of the High Five. Andrew, welcome to Inside the Parker.
Thanks so much, Rob. It's fun to be on with you. I enjoy listening to you on all your podcasts and the radio.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And Glenn Burke's story is a fascinating one for people who do not know. But he played in the major leagues for the Dodgers and A's in 1976 through 1979. And he was the first major league player to come out as gay to his teammates and team owners. How traumatic was that for Glenn?
It was quite traumatic for him. You know, as a minor league player is when he first discovered himself, you know, that he was gay, and as minor league teammates in the Dodgers system were kind of in on this open secret. He was traded from the Dodgers when management of the organization learned about his sexuality, and they attempted to bribe him to get married to, and he said, to a woman. And when they said yes, he said, no, I'm not going for that. And so Al Campanis and Tommy Lasorda traded Glenn away from the Dodgers after he had started two games in the playoffs in 77 and game one of the World Series against the Yankees. He's traded immediately during the next season. And then with the Oakland A's, Billy Martin becomes the manager while Glenn is there. And Martin says he's not going to let a player like Glenn, quote unquote, contaminate his team. And so Glenn Burke, who one of the Dodger coaches, Junior Gilliam, had said had the potential to be the next Willie Mays, you know, had a very short major league career because of the homophobia of the two franchises that he played for.
Yeah, and Glenn Burke died at age 42, very young, AIDS complicated, right?
That's right.
In 1995.
Yeah, and he had been living long stretches just on the streets of San Francisco. You know, he goes from starting at Yankee Stadium in the World Series to living homeless in the Castro District of San Francisco over not that long a period of time. After he's run out of baseball, he struggles financially. He sort of struggles like a lot of athletes do. You know, what's next in life? You know, I had really put he had put a lot of his eggs in the sports basket. You know, and really struggled after that. And faced discrimination on multiple fronts, and died of AIDS, you know, destitute.
Our guest is New York Times bestselling author Andrew Marinus, and he has a new book out, The True Story of Glenn Burke, Singled Out. And talk about the other thing that's very interesting is that he was involved with Dusty Baker. And a lot of people don't know this, as the as the inventors of the high five back in 1977, and it came. Dusty hit a big home run and was coming around third base, and instead of what was back then, Andrew, the tradition of guys patting each other on the butt or slapping
right.
five, he put his hand up high, and Dusty Baker agreed with it, you know, and kind of went there. And now, as we know, we see it all over the place, and everybody does it. Tell us a little bit more about that story.
Yeah, and, you know, it's great that there is this aspect of the story because, you know, other aspects of Glenn's life are tragic. But then there is this sort of joy that was always a part of Glenn. He was the most popular player in the Dodgers clubhouse, even as a fourth outfielder, even as a rookie, you know, such a veteran, successful team. It was Glenn who they considered the funniest guy, the kind of the glue guy in the clubhouse when he was traded to the A's. Steve Garvey and Don Sutton were seen at their lockers crying. Dusty Baker, I interviewed him for the book, he loved Glenn Burke. And he said it was no surprise that it was Glenn who invented the high five after Dusty hit what was his 30th home run of the season in the very final game of the year off of J.R. Richard, who had owned him. And this was Dusty became the fourth Dodger in 1977 to hit 30 homers. They set a major league record. That's the history that is made. And as Dusty's running back to the dugout, Glenn raises his arm in celebration, you know, and Dusty slaps it, and that's the first high five. And so some people will say, and of course it takes two people to high five, and they say, well, did Dusty invent it or did Glenn invent it? And Dusty Baker told me, and I know you're an L.A. guy now, but he said pretty much anything that's cool or hip in life comes from the Bay Area, so you have to give Glenn credit. Glenn was from Oakland, Berkeley. You have to give Glenn credit for inventing it.
Yeah, it's one of those things because if Dusty doesn't go there, it doesn't happen. Do you know
right.
what I mean? It really
yeah.
is. It's both because he had to kind of agree to do it that way. What else will we learn in this book about Glenn Burke that maybe people don't know? Those are two big things that I think are very interesting and people might have heard about. But is there anything else as we read this book that we'll find out?
Yeah, you know, one thing I think would be surprising to people, or certainly was surprising to people back in the 1970s when they had stereotypes about what it meant to be gay, was that, you know, Glenn Burke was just a phenomenal athlete. He was a better basketball player than he was a baseball player. In his senior year of high school at Berkeley High, they went undefeated and won the Northern California Championship. When the NCAA changed its rules in 1974 that would allow a professional athlete in one sport to play collegiately in another. Glenn immediately enrolled at Nevada Reno and scored over 30 points in his first game in college basketball when he hadn't even played a real basketball game in a couple of years. Glenn was also, and this is just some fun trivia, and I know you talk about your shoes a lot, he was the first major league player to wear Nikes in a major league game.
Wow.
And I found the Nike rep that met him at Dodger Stadium and gave him those shoes, and I interviewed him for the book. After he was run out of baseball, Glenn became a star on the gay softball circuit of San Francisco. Like, imagine the Dodgers center fielder showing up on your softball team. You know, so they won a couple national championships in softball. They had what was known as the gay games back then, and Glenn won medals in softball and basketball and track. So he was just, first and foremost, he considered himself an athlete. And part of this disintegration of his life is not only has he run out of baseball, but he's hit by a car crossing the street in San Francisco, and his legs are broken, and he loses his identity as an athlete, period, you know, even as a softball player. And that was a crushing blow to him. So there's a lot of really interesting and unexpected aspects to Glenn's life. He was a great singer. As a kid, he was on a live album of a folk group called the Limelighters. You see little Glenn's picture on the cover of their album. Kind of like in a lot of different interesting spots at different times over the course of his life. An inspiring and tragic story all wrapped into one.
No doubt. Interesting read, Andrew Marinus. Where can people pick up your book?
They can find it pretty much at any bookstore. It's online. There's also an e-version of the book and an audio version of the book if they're interested. They can check me out on my website, andrewmarinus.com. I'm on Twitter as well. Really appreciate it. Anybody who's interested in the book, and happy to answer their questions about it if they find me on Twitter.
All right, Andrew, thank you so much. Thanks for joining the podcast. We appreciate you.
All right, Rob, I really appreciate it. Great talking to you.
Now it's time for some Diamond Dust with Wish TV's Phil Sanchez.
Out of here!
He played baseball in college. Now hear his MLB knowledge.
All right, let's talk about my team, the Mets, and their shortstop, Francisco Lindor. So everyone knows he signed a huge contract with the Mets over the offseason, but he hasn't really lived up to the hype so far. Numbers, not great in the first month. And that's fine in places like Cleveland or Cincinnati, but in a city like New York, where the fans have very little patience, they're going to let you know when you're not playing well and they're not happy. And that's exactly what happened Tuesday night in a game against the Boston Red Sox. Moments after Lindor slowly grounded out in his final at-bat in their loss to Boston, the crowd of a little more than 7,000 people booed the team's new $341 million guy. Now listen, I grew up in Queens. I'm a diehard Mets fan like a lot of them out there. I get it. The fans are frustrated. I am as well. But what good does booing him do? I mean, do you want him to succeed or not? He signed for 10 years, going to be around for a while. Booing him, probably not the best way to introduce him to New York. And I know you're probably saying to yourself, Phil, I don't care. He's paid enough money, so he has to deal with it. And I get that. I get that mindset. But this is 2021. Not everybody's the same. Not everybody performs well under those types of circumstances. And if we want him to succeed, booing him, definitely not going to help. Let's be better, Mets fans.
Now bring in the closer.
Strike one.
Strike two.
Strike three.
He's out.
Here's why MLB is better than the NFL or NBA. And it isn't even close.
Here's why baseball is better than the NBA and the NFL. And I'm talking about betting. Did you hear me? Is this on? I know when people talk about betting, they think about the NFL. They think about betting on the games with the point spreads. Football seems a lot easier to bet on. But hey, don't sleep on betting on baseball. And all you need to do is read the story about Bob Ross, who's a paint instructor, who on opening day secured $200,000 when he picked every single opening game correctly. Did you hear me? Every single game. And there was a glitch in his report, in his computer, where it wiped out his original picks. He changed two of his picks, one involving the Yankees and one involving the Tigers. And actually, because he changed them, got them right and won $200,000, which is incredible. And this is why baseball and betting is going to be a big thing as we go forward. People will be able to bet on everything, every pitch, every at-bat. You'll be able to sit around, sit at the game or sit at home and bet as the game is going on the entire way. There's so many different bets and so many different things. It will generate a ton of money and a ton of fan interest for guys who like to bet the game. In the words of New York TV legend, the late Bill Jorgensen, thanking you for your time this time until next time. Rob Parker, out.
He can't get it. This could be an inside to Parker.
See you next week. Same bat time, same bat station.